So one time I was listening to Bhikkhu Anālayo give a talk on the Brahmaviharas, and many of you are familiar with him. He is a contemporary Theravadan monk, very brilliant man, German-born, and lives in this country, I believe, now. And he was talking about the primary Brahmaviharas of metta, compassion, mudita, and upekkha, equanimity, in the following way. And I share it with you because it really went in for me. He says, with metta, the heart loves. With compassion, with karuna, the heart responds. With mudita, appreciative joy, vicarious joy, the heart delights. And with upekkha, equanimity, the heart allows. And it made so much sense to me that in this framework of the primary Brahmaviharas, that the heart loves, the heart responds, the heart delights, and the heart allows. And it could be for you that there's one of those that feels most natural for you, really easy, really comes to your heart easily. There may be some that don't, and that it's a little bit distant, a little bit hard to relate to. Nonetheless, this is just a way of meeting these practices. When can you notice the heart in that mode of friendliness, that mode of responding to pain, that the mode of delight in somebody else's great good fortune? And when things are going well for you and you feel that stability, that equanimity, the heart is allowing whatever is happening. And there's enough stability to meet whatever is happening without contention, without contention. So I want to talk a little further, like I said, about metta tonight, the wish for oneself and others to be well, to be happy, the capacity to cultivate friendliness and goodwill. I think goodwill is one of my favorite ways to think about what is metta. And the other way I love thinking about it comes from John Peacock. John Peacock is a British Pali scholar, and he says a more accurate translation of metta is to grow fat with friendliness. To grow fat with friendliness. Isn't that great? It's relatable, isn't it? I think it's so relatable, and I have found that I thrive in teachings that are relatable. When I can really apply it to my life and see how it shows up. And I think about this growing a friendly heart as a little bit of a cartoon character heart. You know, walking down the street and you might run into a friend you haven't seen in a long time, or maybe they're across the street, and there's a welling up for me of happiness to see this person. And do you remember in the cartoons when hearts were expanding, there would be like wah, wah, wah in a cartoon. That's what metta feels like to me. So, this warm-heartedness, this goodwill, I feel like it's also a practice of intentionally training to turn the rheostat, the thermostat of the heart, to warm and start there, to start from a place of warmth instead of a place of distance or maybe suspicion, or I'm not sure I like you, I don't really know. But what if we start with friendliness as a serious way to start? And the other way that has made a big impression on me was when I heard His Holiness the Dalai Lama talk about this. And he said, really, what the Brahmaviharas are doing and metta, what it really is a practice of internal disarmament. Internal disarmament. And when I heard that, I got it on a deeper level. Because what's really important to me is that I don't harbor ill will, that I really don't let ill will take up residence inside of me. It's too costly, it's toxic, it takes up space, and there's enough toxicity in the world. We know that. And it doesn't mean I'm going to like everything. It doesn't mean you're going to like everything, of course. But just not holding a grudge. internally disarming. That doesn't mean don't have limits, don't have boundaries, but notice when the heart is armed versus when the heart is aware and balanced, and where your tolerances are for difficulty and how you navigate that. And that can be done very, very skillfully. And I think this practice teaches us that. So the difference of, it's also important to understand, I know we all understand what metta is, what compassion is, but what is it actually like for you to experience it? And I think this is an important distinction, so we get out of our heads around, yeah, I know what metta is, I know it's friendliness, I know that it's the heart that is not obstructed, but what is it like to feel that? And I remember one of my earliest experiences when I was just coming into this practice many years ago. My children, who are now adults, were in high school, and I used to worry about them a lot, especially when they were teenagers in cars at lunch. And anybody who's had kids and who are driving at lunch, and who knows where they all are. And I used to be in my office where I worked in town, and I could hear sometimes a lunchtime siren. And it was a startle for me. I always worried about, where are those kids when there's a lunchtime siren? Not to mention that maybe they were ditching school not at lunchtime, but you know, I wasn't worried about them then, but I was worried about them at lunch. And I started a practice when I would hear a lunchtime siren, that I would send out this metta that would say, I hope you're okay. Whatever's happening, I hope you get what you need. And I have no idea what was going on with who knows why there was a siren, but it eased my heart and it eased my fear. And thankfully, my kids never got into a problem at lunchtime when they were in cars that I still don't know about. You know, who knows? But my point is, just by saying, I hope you're okay, it eased my fear. And as you probably know, the Buddha taught metta as a practice, as an antidote, as a remedy for fear. When his monastics were out in the forest and he was first teaching them practice, and there was in the rains retreat or the outside retreats, and they went into the forest and came back and said, we can't do this. There are too many tree spirits that are stinking and screaming and telling us to leave, and it's terrifying out in the forest. We can't practice there. And he taught them metta and said, go out there and offer these tree spirits metta. Offer yourself metta. Find that core of friendliness inside of you. And yeah, as the mythology goes, that his disciples went out into the forest and started practicing metta and offering this to the tree spirits, and everything calmed down, including them. And so I take that mythology to heart, because it really helped me. And at the same time, who knows where our metta prayers go, right? Who knows? But it really does help. Here's a fun poem from Michael Dennis Brown called Telepathy. Today I explained telepathy to you, and telephone and television, on the way to daycare. And I said, sometimes when I'm at work, I'll think of you. And if I could send you that thought with my mind, you'd get it right then. And maybe you'd smile, stopping a moment at whatever you're doing, or maybe not, but just going on with it, making a mask out of paper plates and orange and green cards with markers and scissors and paste, or screaming circles in the gym, either being a monster or being chased by a gang of them. But still, you'd get the picture. I was beaming. And you'd brighten inside and flash me something back, which I'd get where I was and smile at. That's telepathy, I said, pulling into the parking lot, looking at you in the mirror. So is there a way that our goodwill is beaming and radiating through the airwaves? I don't know. But it feels good, right? It feels good and it eases the heart. And we know, at least I also think that metta is not magic. I don't have magical thinking about it. I have my direct experience of when I practice metta, my heart relaxes and I don't have as much fear. I don't have as much anxiety. I feel more capacity. There was a time where I was sitting annual metta retreats because this has been such a profoundly important practice for me. And at the time I was still living in Arcata and I used to row on Humboldt Bay with crew and in a single scull. And one day, it was a beautiful, beautiful day, I was out rowing with a friend and I had just come back from a metta retreat, pardon me, and I realized that I could sync my metta phrases with each stroke I took in the boat. And if you're familiar with rowing, you go backwards. And it was just a beautiful day, and I had this rhythm going. My body felt strong. My mind and heart were post-retreat at ease. And I was on to the third phrase, may I be safe and protected. May I be peaceful and happy. May I be healthy. And my oar blade caught on a big root that I didn't know I was there. And the next thing I knew, I tumbled upside down and fell in the water in the middle of my metta phrases. And I'll tell you, I came up cracking up because metta is beautiful. It's not magic, but you still have to look where you're going. You have to look where you're going. So take this gorgeous practice of metta and compassion, take it to heart. But stay grounded, stay clear, keep your eyes open. Be realistic. Be realistic. It stretches our heart, this practice. Andrea Gibson, who is the poet laureate of Colorado, they wrote, "In the end, I want my heart to be covered in stretch marks. In the end, I want my heart to be covered in stretch marks." So what is your relationship to metta? Is it a stretch for you? Is it natural for you? What have you found in this practice? I really want to talk with you about that. I'd love to hear from anybody. What is your relationship to metta practice? Go ahead and unmute anyone. Deborah, please, and then Carolyn. Go ahead and unmute Deborah. Deborah, can you unmute, please? There you go.
I'm sorry, my laptop crashed. Two trips to the fix-it shop and not working.
Oh, bummer.
And I'm on my phone and... Great. So yes, Meta. Just hearing you talk about it and those beautiful directions you gave us during meditation time, I actually feel my whole upper chest, which I call my heart chakra, just soften and get bigger.
Oh, beautiful. Yeah.
And I just am so grateful I can be here tonight and to hear you and everything you're saying. And when I feel, I do have a cousin down in Southern California, and I have people on the East Coast who are suffering with other stuff. And when I wish them well in my mind and in my body, the same thing happens. Mm-hmm. This sort of enlarging, softening. Yeah. Thank you for this.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's beautiful. And enlarging and softening in my body. Yeah. Carolyn and then Patty.
I've been quite angry with a couple of people lately, and it's been getting into my meditation and, you know, the conversations in my head. And I just decided to do metta for them. And every time I think of these people, I'm not avoiding. I just I go, okay, this is as it is. This is what it is. And I send the metta, and it's dissolved and freed me.
That's it. That is to be, it's dissolved and freed me, because it's too costly to hold that anger inside. It doesn't mean you're going to maybe, you know, you may not agree with whatever caused the anger. I mean, the action, it isn't about that.
No.
No, this is about the freedom.
It frees me to have, like tonight, I saw this person and he said something really funny. And I just cracked up. And it was the metta that allowed me to receive his humor.
Yeah. Yeah. So. And isn't that is an opening, right? It's like an air hole. It gives you the way to receive it, to see him as more than the thing that upset you or that caused the anger. Because all of us are like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Not one way. Patty. Hi. Where are you?
Hi. Thank you so much. I've had a very interesting relationship with metta for years. And I think it transformed my relationship with my sister. My entire life, I had contention with her. I felt like she never liked me. She always resented me. And it was a very awkward and difficult relationship. And when I started practicing metta, there's one phrase in particular that I learned from Philip Moffitt that has helped me tremendously. And it transformed not only my relationship with her, but allowed me to abandon ill will toward people whose actions are anathema to me. People in the world who just boil my blood. The phrase that I can offer them sincerely without having to pretend is, may you have a calm, clear mind and a peaceful, loving heart.
Isn't that gorgeous?
I find that so much more sincere than may you be happy, may you be well, because part of me didn't want to wish them wellness. But I didn't want to go there. I don't want to wish them ill. I don't want ill will toward them.
Yeah.
So by wishing them a calm, clear mind and a peaceful, loving heart, it transforms my relationship with them, and it transformed my relationship with my sister. And now we're friends. It's still a little awkward, but there isn't that tension.
That's so beautiful.
So I love that phrase.
Yeah, may you have a calm, clear mind and a peaceful, loving heart. That's gorgeous. It's really, really beautiful. And this goes to the importance to find what works for you. And to trust the practice as you can, but find your way and trust what is coming. Trust your wisdom. I'm so glad Philip gave you that. What a big deal. Thank you, Patty. Okay, so I'm going to pull up the Metta Sutta and let's read it together. And my guess is you've done this many times. And if you haven't, I hope you enjoy it. I do want to know, is it big enough? Can you see it on your screen? And does it, you can, Carolyn says, no way. How's that? That's good? Okay. So what I would like to do here is I'm going to read it. And if you're in a place that you can actually read it out loud, and because you're not disturbing anybody else, and please everybody mute so we don't have all the cacophony. But let's read it together. And as you read it, notice if there is a line or multiple lines that really resonate. Is there something that pushes you away? Is it just neutral? Whatever it is. And then we'll talk about it. Such a gorgeous sutta. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a parent protects with their life their child, their only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. Radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downward to the depths, outward and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all unwholesome sense desires, is not born again into this world. Isn't that beautiful? So what do you think? Let's see if I can get everybody up on my screen. Oh, what is a line that gave you that sense of yes? Or the line that says, I don't know about that. Who wants to talk about this? Okay, good. Nancy, please. And then Donna.
Why don't you take Donna first?
Okay. Because,
yeah.
Okay. Hi, Donna.
Oh. So, yeah, I'm so familiar with this beloved sutra. Two things. So the translation of mother to parent just hit me with a, why didn't I ever think of that?
Yeah.
Because I had a lot of trouble with that when it was mother for years. And I've known other people who've changed the words a little bit. So I feel comfortable with that. And whoever did that.
This is Sylvia, actually.
That's great. Okay.
This is Sylvia's version. I didn't say that at the start, but that's right. It opens it up to omitting none, doesn't it? It's a wider scope. It includes anybody who is a parent, not just a mother. But again, you know, that was a translation thing and certainly a context to timing. Thank you. Nancy.
Heidi, I love this sutta. It is so beautiful, and I've chanted it before. It's lovely to be chanted as well. But I'll tell you, and I'm my mind catches with the, what about the people who do great harm?
Of course it catches there, right?
Every time I see it, I go through, how do I do that? How do I have that kind of boundless heart with someone who creates and or in history has created great harm? So I wonder if you might speak a little to that.
Yeah, you know, for me, it comes down to may your suffering end so you stop causing harm.
Oh, I like that.
It really comes down to that for me, because I think that people who are suffering, whatever they're suffering, that causes their bad actions, their actions that cause harm. So we could go back to, where's Patty? Patty's phrase, may you have a clear and kind mind, close, right? Clear and kind mind and a loving heart. That might be a little too far for some people. That might feel like it wouldn't work, but if it works, great. But truly what I feel is that for those who are creating incredible harm, may your suffering end so you stop hurting people.
That's beautiful, Heidi. Thank you.
You're so welcome. Thanks for bringing that up, because I think it's a really important point.
Especially given tomorrow.
And about, yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. Liz, hi, good evening. Nice to see you.
Good to see you. Are you settled yet?
Yes, pretty settled. Woo! Yep, pretty settled. Yep.
Well,
thank you.
I live on metta. It's like my water and food all day long, all the time. It is a self-compassion practice for me.
Totally.
I don't know what I would do without it, honestly. It's such a gift. Mm-hmm. And intention is not a word that I particularly like. I find it annoying and phony. But honestly, just now as I was sitting here, it came to me that metta is also an intention.
That's fascinating. You know, isn't that, I love that you said that. Yes, it is an intention, of course, because this sutta is huge. It is a practice. It is aspirational. It's the direction to go. It's a practice. And if I can intend to omit none, it might take me the rest of my life and other lifetimes to omit none. But I do appreciate, Liz, that you have it in the context of intention really bugs me. I don't resonate with that. And this is, it's really wonderful to see, oh, this is a doorway into intention.
Yes, I'm quite surprised.
Isn't that the way practice works? You know, like these teachings, it can be quite a surprise.
Yes, well, I'm having tons of surprises these days because of old age, just extraordinary, wonderful openings. I'm very, very grateful.
Oh, I'm happy to know that. Thank you. Thank you.
Good to see you.
You too. What else? Who else wants to talk about the sutta? What moved your heart either toward or away? Michelle, please.
I have a bit of a question. Every time I've read it, it's sort of, I just wonder, the line about wishing those born and to be born, what is the idea of wishing those to be born?
Find it.
Sort of midway, I think.
Is that where it is?
Is it just the general idea of wishing well, even, you know, for those
everywhere?
Everywhere, or is there something kind of
different? I don't know the answer to this. I invite anybody else to jump in on it. I think that in our cultural context, I think that we can just say, those not yet born, may they also come into a heart of kindness. When they arrive, whenever that is, may they come into a heart of kindness and friendliness. I don't want to read too much into that, especially in our cultural context of reproductive rights. Okay. I really don't want to attach it to that, because that, I don't know how to relate to it in that context. But the way I like to relate to this is the omitting none. So whatever living beings there may be, whether they're weak or strong, omitting none, great, mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, we're not leaving anybody out. That's how I relate to it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Sheree and Bowman.
Yes, thank you. So how I relate to that phrase is future generations. You know, it's so, paying it forward.
I love that. You know,
if it hadn't been for those 2,500 years ago that brought these teachings to us, this meta practice, mm-hmm. You know, I think we practice it, or I practice it, with the idea that it will continue.
That's right.
Yeah.
I love that you said that. Future generations, because of what the Buddha learned, look where we are.
Right. Yeah.
That's Thank right. You. So if we look at our karmic intention, let's put that together. Like, we're doing this to pay it forward. We're not doing it just to take care of me. Yeah, I really appreciate that, Bowman. I think that's right on. Mm-hmm. Michelle.
I just wanted to thank you as well. That was, every time I've read the sutta, I think about that, and what a beautiful and I think real way to look at that. And that even speaks to me environmentally. Future generations, what we leave, what we're doing to the planet and leaving for future. That's an act of kindness for those to come after us. Thank you so much. That was beautiful.
Yeah, Michelle, it reminds me of the Native American thoughts of seven generations. You know, it's like what we do now affects, you know, can have a bearing on seven generations.
What a beautiful sangha. Thank you.
Anybody else want to? Carolyn, please.
Heidi, this, just stop me if I'm ill sharing. The waiting, where is it? Whether they, I'm just looking for that quote again. What I'm trying to tell you is that when I had to have my horse euthanized, my daughter was a young teenager at the time, and she came and said to me that there was a barn in her speak in heaven, my speak at that time too, filled with animals that had been members of our families, and that the animals who were waiting to incarnate would come to that barn where Beshu and Patches and all the dogs and cats were, and those our animals would give them hints on how to find a good home.
Oh, that's really great. This is really, really great. And so she was taking care of her mama's heart. Like, don't worry, mom. It's going to be okay. Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you, Carolyn. Deborah, and then Mary.
I'm kind of laughing at myself because going back to what Patty said about the words we learned from Philip, a calm, clear mind and a peaceful, loving heart. I think I say that to myself every morning before I get out of bed. But when they're up, and going back to what Nancy was saying, people who are hard to wish well, people who are harming in one way or another, in many ways, I used to have some very sort of, okay, I'll just say it, violent urges, violent urges that could happen in the public square, in the village square to these people. And working with not wanting that thought in my head or in my body, I have come up with sending them to re-education camps.
There you go. So, you know, whatever image, whatever comes up that is, how can I help this person learn? You know, how can I, to visualize that, it's better on your heart to not picture them being something violent.
Exactly.
In the public square.
Exactly.
Go to rehab camp. Exactly.
Thank you. I just loved, you know, what you said about it on us, you know, carrying that stuff around. Of course, that's not new, but, you know, practice is a journey. And
yeah, I mean, you know, we have to do this over and over again. No, this is so not new. This is not new. But this is why we keep coming back to this really gorgeous sutta.
Yeah, and it is.
Because
and I know I have
educated.
But anyway, thank you so much again for all of this tonight, because
welcome,
and the giggle that it took me some years, but, you know, a few years ago I came up with Okay, re-education camps, Deborah.
That's great. Re-education.
Nothing violent.
There you go. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mary, please.
I love this sutta also. But tonight as we were reading it, it brought to mind the section where it's sort of talking about one who knows the path to peace, let them be able and upright, gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm. And it reminded me of this incredibly beautiful aunt that I had. She never married, but she was always there for all of the children in the family. And I'm one of nine, and I had probably 100 cousins. And this woman was like the center in many ways of love for all of us. Mm. And as an adult recently, as a Buddhist, I thought, I came to the conclusion she was a reborn diva, a deva, whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, to be impacted by people who are really genuinely peaceful and loving and humble is really remarkable. And it, you know, that kind of role modeling is wonderful for me to have people like that in my life.
No kidding. You'll never not have that.
Right.
You know, as a resource, when you can bring back her memory,
yeah,
and the love, like she was the center of love for all of us.
Right, for all these children.
Gift. What a gift.
Yeah.
You know, let's go to this piece. I want to say something about this. Let me unhighlight it because it's kind of obnoxious. All right. This is what should be done by one who knows, who's skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Sometimes people get a little tripped up in that first sentence because this sutta is prescriptive. It is not saying, this is what you could do. The Buddha is saying, no, this is what must be done. This is what should be done. And I appreciate that because it lays out a map. It lays out this roadmap. And when I think about, well, what does it take to become one who is skilled in goodness and then who knows the path of peace? And I love that there are some things I've learned that I'm skilled at, and there's certainly lots more. And then I fall off and I, you know, make the mistakes and come back and make amends. But it reminds me of A.J. Musty, anybody familiar with who he was? He was a Dutch-American-born peace activist in the 60s and 70s and written widely on peace activism. And he's known for having said, there is no path to peace. Peace is the path. Hmm. And that's so reassuring that this is already a path of peace that we are all already undertaking. And we don't have to keep doing so many things to say, okay, now I've arrived on this path of peace. Showing up for Sangha means I am choosing this. This is part of taking refuge and taking these precepts of peace. And the other story about A.J. Musty that I really like is part of his activism, hang on a sec. Part of his activism, apparently, he spent many nights in front of the White House in the 60s and during the Vietnam War holding a candle. And he would just go there and he would show up every single night doing that. And a journalist interviewed him about, why are you doing this? What's happening? Do you think that you're really going to change the policies of the U.S. government? He said, I'm not doing this to change the country. I'm doing this so the country doesn't change me.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that really poignant. I am doing this so the country doesn't change me. And I think in this time that we are heading into, this is part of why I'm so committed to metta practice, is that I want metta practice to keep supporting and changing me, and not the practices of vitriol. and all of the crazy that we're seeing. I realize I'm letting my politics out. So light a candle so the nastiness doesn't change you. You know, just don't let it, and sink into this gorgeous practice that we already have, that we are already practicing. I want to end with this little, tiny little poem, and then we'll go to Metta. It's called 150 Characters by Nikita Gill. Everything is on fire, but everyone I love is doing beautiful things and trying to make life worth living. And I know I don't have to believe everything, but I believe in that. So trust your practice. Trust your practice. I know I don't have to believe in everything, but I believe in people doing good things and each other. Practicing for the good, and we know what that is. We know what that is. So thank you, everybody, for listening, for hanging out with me, for studying the Metta Sutta.